Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. On today's broadcast, I've asked Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, to browse with me through the magazine's official website to discover topics of interest, stories, and insights that we need to examine as we work to maintain our religious freedoms. The evil one is determined to undermine our ability to worship God as we feel we must, and as the saying goes, forewarned is forearmed. Lincoln, I always enjoy digging around www.libertymagazine.org and have found
good place
some,
to be.
Oh, absolutely. And have found some discussion topics that I feel would be of interest to our listeners. I'd like to hear your take on some of these matters. Let's begin with this one. We've talked about it before. Hosanna Tabor.
The Supreme Court case. Yeah. Perhaps some of our listeners think, well, Supreme Court cases are pretty esoteric. I don't need to worry about those. Just be aware, the President of the United States worries plenty about them.
He certainly does.
remember in his last State of the Union, he railed on against a Supreme Court case that treated, for the first time, corporations as individuals, and that's had huge ramifications on the election process. So when the Supreme Court makes a decision on something that affects religious liberty, it's more than just a theoretical sort of a ivory tower thing. There are ramifications.
Yes.
And we've been watching for some time the case known as Hosanna Tabor. There have been two articles in Liberty Magazine on our website, www.libertymagazine.org. And we've got another one coming up because we want a postscript on the case, which just was discussed in November, or December rather, and the decision was just brought down a few days ago. It could have gone very badly because what was at stake was really the whole relationship of churches to the state and the exemptions and deferrals the state made to religion. Basically, it centered around what is known as the ministerial exemption or exception, not just ministers themselves, but the church structure, its employees, ministers, teachers, all those concerned about advancing the work of the church, have been given a wide legal berth by the government, recognizing that to interfere is to essentially risk directing how a church goes about promoting its doctrinal viewpoint. At the edges, though, that can mean, as Hosanna Tabor case, which involved a teacher in a Lutheran school, it can mean that from her perspective, she was fired because of a disability problem, which is prohibited under employment laws.
Right.
And from the school's perspective, it related to her effectiveness advancing the Lutheran teaching program, and that they were within their rights to order that according to a church structure, to let her go and not to have to give a reason. That's basically what it devolves
right,
to for the
exactly.
churches. And she challenged that. And I actually thought there was a good chance that the Supreme Court would narrow it, not give away the whole exception, because there's some considerable respect for the role of religion. But I thought they would nibble around the edges of employment for people like this teacher, Cheryl Peach, who are hardly involved with religion, but in a religious school environment. They might require the church to adhere very rigorously to all these non-discrimination requirements. But the Supreme Court, in an absolutely unanimous decision, which is rare, affirmed the ministerial exception.
How about that?
So from this perspective, things are safe. I'm inclined to think myself that it just puts off to another day an increasing public frustration with some elements of church governance, most particularly the church of six of the nine justices, the Roman Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church is not all wrong, and, you know, bad things happen within the human structure of all churches. But there's a continuing pattern of obfuscation, to use a complicated word.
Yes.
It doesn't appear to most people, to the media and a lot of commentators, that the Roman Catholic Church has accepted administrative responsibility for the ongoing sexual scandal. That by and large, they use the exemption or the exception to hide behind and not be forthcoming. And so I wouldn't be surprised if a few years down the line this is revisited. But for now, they signed off on it very nicely.
So that means what? Give it to us in a practical way with Hosanna Tabor. What does that mean for the plaintiff, and what does that mean for the organization?
Well, it means that the woman is not employed anymore. They are upheld in their right to dismiss her, mm-hmm. essentially without reason, but the reason that they give is that her services is not compatible with the spiritual aims of educating young people in a Lutheran church school.
Okay. Well, that's good news for Seventh-day Adventist churches as well, right?
Right. And it makes a church less vulnerable right. to disaffected teachers or someone else trying to sue the church, saying that they were treated prejudicially. They may have been, but yes. the state sees that in the church context, the church has the right to administer its spiritual direction. And yes, it may treat some people as, word Adventists don't use, but heretics or doctrinal dissidents. But that's not for the state. The state is not competent nor authorized to get into those matters. That's basically the way they see it.
They're not supposed to get into that. Keep them separated. All right, very good. Okay, another case, or I should say another challenge that we are facing today was brought up in a discussion on www.libertymagazine.org. And the question was asked, how involved should the United States be in issues of international religious freedom? I mean, are we the spiritual police of the world, I guess is what we're trying to say here.
Well, the U.S. has been very involved from the beginning. And I think it's because while the U.S. has never been perfect as a human instrumentality, mm-hmm. I mean, the government, mm-hmm. and is not improving, there are many little multiplying areas of concern. But I think the Constitution so very specifically laid out religious freedom and a dynamic that's been described as the separation of church and state that has put the United States in a very good position to discuss and even expect other countries to model after this.
Wait a minute, Lincoln. I've lived in other countries before, and in Muslim countries, and I can see why Muslims and other religious factions would have kind of a jaundiced eye toward America, who's trying to come in not only to take the resources of the country, but take the spiritual foundation. Because you have said in this program that the spiritual life of people in many countries is their national life, is their civil life. There's no right. separation between two of them. So you're saying America can come in and say, not only are you wrong spiritually, you're also wrong as who you are and what you represent as a nation.
Well, yeah, you're steering me nicely, but that's why I was quibbling on it, saying that the U.S. is not always perfect in its practical application. But it feels, since it's had this model, that it can talk to other countries. But yes, increasingly, I think there's a not just a perception, there's a reality of double standards here.
Well, yeah.
And this is why it's doubly important that the United States adhere to a true principle of religious liberty, not religious tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there is some serious problem, it seems to me, with the U.S., strong-arming any number of other countries on matters of religious tolerance and practice and so on, even as...
Well, we put drones in the air if people
don't
agree with us.
Yeah, you're more contemporary. I was going to say, even as we twist thumbs in Abu Ghraib and urinate on other people.
Yeah.
You know, when it suited the authorities, they made a big hoopla that bin Laden's body was treated respectfully and buried with honors, but... that's countermanded pretty easily by this thing in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So no, the U.S. needs to be careful. But it's in an interesting role. I mean, it's military and financial dominance till now mm-hmm. has given it an easy sense of entitlement to talk about religion. But I'm giving them the benefit that there is something fairly unique about the way that the Constitution expresses the goal of religious freedom and the separation of church and state, which is quite different. There are many countries that insert some nice language about religious freedom, mm-hmm. even as they don't practice it. But there's mm-hmm. not too many that actually specifically state church and state are to be separate. I know Australia has that too, but it was modeled after the American Constitution. But not too many try to consciously put a legal cleaver between the prerogatives and the power of the state and those of the church.
I just, I guess I'm saying we just should be very careful as a nation.
Absolutely. Well, I think we should be very careful, and I think the U.S. is seriously into the level of hypocrisy at the moment.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, good. We agree on that. That's for sure. Okay.
And let me even explain. Hillary Clinton, not too long ago, and by and large, I think she's very competent, and we know that she understands religious freedom. She spoke admirably to one of our religious liberty dinners one year, so about 5-6 years ago. But, you know, when she went to China, anxious to mend bridges or mend the situation with China and continue trade and so on, and of course they're our largest holder of U.S. debt, I think, she actually said openly that issues of religious freedom and of civil liberties were important, but that they were on the back burner at the time because they're mostly concerned about trade. Yeah. Well, you know, you can't afford, well, on religious liberty to set it aside for any other reason. It's either important or it's not. And you have to signal that this is not going to go away, that your commitment to religious freedom is unaffected by opposition, basically, because that's what was holding her. China was growling and grumbling and saying the U.S. needed us because they've become the linchpin of the world economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that America has every right to model what we believe for religious freedom. And I believe that we have every right to withhold purchases from countries. If you're gonna do that to people, then we're not gonna buy your goods. That's okay. But it's when we start rattling sabers about these things that it gets me really concerned.
Absolutely, it doesn't go well. And where I would like to focus on the U.S. efforts to project our values, often with the battleship cruising offshore, create bad reactions. But what I think will be the most dangerous, and we're slightly into it, is when the U.S. turns its back on some of these great principles by lowballing them and acting differently within the country. Mm-hmm. That will pervert religious freedom around the world. I think it's functioning as a model even when it doesn't understand that or when it's not trying to project that model. People look at the U.S., and so for a very narrow religious viewpoint to gain ascendancy here, I think it will rapidly accelerate bad tendencies in the rest of the world.
During the spring and summer seasons in the country of Kyrgyzstan, many people grow the necessary foods that keep them alive. But when winter comes, all growing stops, unless they have a greenhouse. Thanks to ADRA and you, families can grow food year-round in greenhouses provided by your generosity. These families also receive education in healthy nutrition, agriculture, and marketing. Your gift just keeps on giving. This is just one of many opportunities offered to you in this year's edition of the Adventist Development and Relief Agency International's The Original Really Useful Gift Catalog. To find out more, visit www.adra.org. That's www.adra.org. Or call 1-800-424-ADRA. That's 1-800-424-2372. This is your chance to select the perfect gift for that special someone who has nothing. Thank you. We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. Our program today is called From the Front Lines, and we're talking about some of the issues that are being faced by many.
There's a book that Seventh-day Adventists are well aware of, Great Controversy, written by Ellen White, who was, the history books will say she was a visionary.
Yes.
Of the early Adventist days in the middle 1800s. She had what was seen as visions, and she said that they came from heaven. Mm-hmm. They have been typically tested against biblical truth, and they're quite consistent. And her whole point was that she was re-emphasizing usually the prophetic outlines that Adventists were studying in Daniel and Revelation. But picking up on Revelation 14, she said that the United States will be foremost at the very end of time in compelling to religious observance, which is a denial of its religious pluralism. Yeah. And she does make the point that once the U.S. does this, that pretty much the whole world will follow this model. So that's what I was alluding to earlier. Yeah. I think you can logically deduce that anyhow, but she says it specifically under inspiration that we will see this perhaps in our lifetime, but certainly in our era, because we are in the modern era where everything is coming to a crisis, it's coming to its head.
Yes.
Modernization is rapidly advancing to who knows what. You know, George Orwell thought he had it right in 1984, but this is the brave new world, to quote Aldous Huxley.
Sometimes it doesn't seem so brave, I have to say.
No,
that.
Yeah. But I think even a person uninterested in religion can recognize that the dynamic of progress in the world has sped up so much that you could reasonably expect in a lifetime to see all things come to their fruition. The developments in the Middle East with the Arab Spring has shown how quickly, once one country erupted, it's like the dominoes fell.
It did.
Months and weeks. Yeah. Where in my youth, a war was fought in Vietnam to stop the dominoes that had already taken some years, and they never quite fell the way the planners thought. But it was slow. It was a decades-long thing, even if it was happening, as they said. But now it can be within a news cycle.
That's true. That's true.
And of course, electronics and the surveillance era that we're in, all of these things are just accelerating the processes of history, which are really, if you analyze history, it's social movements. It's people talking about something, changing their minds, acting on it. That dynamic has sped up many, many times over previous ages.
Okay, libertymagazine.org is the website, and another issue that's being discussed right now on that website is this idea of burqas, and the question is asked, are burqa bans oppressive to religious freedom or a defense of the rights and dignity of women? Now, we need to have a little history here of what a burqa is.
Well, many people now, even in the West, have become more used to seeing Muslim women in typical dress, but it's not the one dress. It is pretty much uniform that any observant Muslim, the woman will have her head covered. That's a hijab, just a scarf sometimes. But the more extreme fundamentalist practitioners of Islam will have a burqa, which is a head-to-toe covering, yes, with sometimes the merest suggestion of a gauzy see-through over the eyes. Mm. Essentially, this is sort of a piece of dress usually, but it's
basically
almost like
a walking tent is what it is.
Yes, a walking tent. And there are some practical problems with that in Afghanistan and Iraq. Men have put on burqas and tucked a load of bombs with them under this thing and gotten up to some big trouble. Yeah. I think the objection in the West is twofold. There's the suspicion of another religion, but there's also the horror that here is a subterfuge, that there's menace beneath it.
Yeah, and also we need to say that the burqa is designed to keep women completely covered so there are no temptation to men. I think that's why they became into being, that they're supposed to. This had to have been created by men. I'm sorry. The burqa had to be created by men to protect themselves. Women are not
going to. I'll indulge myself on this radio program.
You think women are designing burqas?
No. I'm going to make a statement.
Okay,
Islam has a perfect right to exist.
Yes.
You can believe in, you can worship the great pumpkin,
yes,
as far as religious liberty allows you.
Yes.
But one wonders, you gave that outline, which is what is said, but Islam is the religion that allows at least four wives.
This is true.
So,
so there's an inconsistency here.
The burqa has not tampered down the... It's even possible that it's increased
the
yearning.
I think you're right.
But yes, ostensibly it was done from a point of modesty we have to understand that it's a fairly extreme application,
yes,
of a principle that was adapted there, and it's not a doctrinal requirement. It's really a cultural addendum to Islamic practice.
And they have every right to do that. There's nothing wrong with someone
Absolutely.
Doing that. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
So I don't think it's good, and Liberty Magazine would never endorse any country passing a blanket ban on wearing such religious garb. And we've heard many articles over the years, not just about burqas, but all sorts of religious garb. There's the turban of the Sikhs and the skull cap of the Jews, which is not as common. But, there were there have been issues about people working in food service and how their heads should be covered and what should not be on there. You know, there's many variations on this. But, you know, we need to defend the right of people to have religious dress if necessary. Where it gets sort of strange, and there's not an easy answer, but I think it's obvious to people in the West that there's a problem, is, for example, driver's licenses. Mm-hmm. A license is not just an intrusion. It's an identification. It has connections to tracking criminals and so on. Mm-hmm. And it seems reasonable that even a woman wearing a burqa should have a driver's license that shows her face. There was, and I think I mentioned it on this program, relevant here. When I was in Australia, I saw on television the strangest case. A policeman stopped a Muslim woman. It appeared she was an Australian national that had converted to Islam. Mm-hmm. But he stopped her for speeding, and she was wearing a full burqa. Mm-hmm. And she objected to him even stopping her and started swearing and cursing at him, which I'm not really sure is inherently Islamic. Okay. So I've got to give them that benefit. But the policeman had the camera on when he made the apprehension. It was shown on TV. Yeah. And he comes over very nicely and says, "You were speeding, madam." And he says, "Show me your license and show me your face." And she would not. And with much profanity, took off after him and claimed that it was police harassment and all the rest. So he arrested her in the end. Mm-hmm. And so when I was seeing it on TV, it had gone to a court case. And curiously enough, the judge dismissed the case because he said it could not be proved that the woman in court was the woman that he apprehended because she'd never shown her face.
Interesting.
But I believe that will not happen again because it was a salutary lesson to law enforcement that you can't let someone get away with it. Yeah. So the issue there had absolutely nothing on the part of the law enforcement to do with religion, and they were not trying to be disrespectful. But there's a point of nonsense, I think, with religious dress and religious behavior. And, you know, you and I are vegetarians as Seventh-day Adventists. Yes. But I think Paul says himself in the Gospels, he says, ask no questions for conscience sake. Mm-hmm. If, you know, your life were on the limit, are you going to eat an unclean meat or die from not eating it? I think not, because the purpose of it is not an absolute. Mm-hmm. It's a requirement to honor God as best you can and sustain life and so on. Yeah. And the burqa, again, modesty, is you got to the point of it. It's modesty. But if in the pursuit of modesty they will defy law, they will enable illegal and even violent activities, I think you had to look at the balancing point. So to answer it without appearing prejudiced to Muslims, as a general principle, we would have to defend the right of people to wear the burqa. As a practical matter in these particular circumstances, I think it's just inflammatory to people of other faith as well as to the due diligence of the practice of law to insist that it never be taken off. It's getting in the way of the normal things that normal societies must do today.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. That makes good sense to me. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, is our guest today. I'm Charles Mills. We're talking about some of the issues that are highlighted right now on www.libertymagazine.org. And listener, I recommend that you stop by and give that website a look, because I think you'll find many wonderful pieces of information that you need as you yourself go through your own battle against religious intolerance. Okay, talking about bans, there's a ban of a very different nature in San Francisco that's on the November ballot. Tell us about that ban and what your thoughts are on it.
Well, I don't know about the November ballot in great detail, but we have an article coming out in Liberty Magazine about the ongoing move in San Francisco and I'm trying to think another U.S. city where they have tried to ban circumcision.
Okay. From our perspective, we go like, why? But, you know, if you're a Jew And if you are an Orthodox Jew and you believe in what God tells you as an Orthodox Jew, this is a real issue for you. And it is a religious issue, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The Bible is quite plain on this. And as I understand it, Muslims also understand the issue of circumcision. So this has a long and unquestioned religious tradition. And I do believe that the San Francisco move is nothing but religious prejudice. There's not really a very good logical civil reason for insisting on this. But it's part of a pattern that pops up now and then. It's very prejudicial in nature about dietary requirements of certain faiths. And of course, we've had to battle it through in prisons. Jews with kosher meals and Muslims want halal. Mm-hmm. People who don't like that say that this is unfair. Why should they have special treatment and all the rest? Da, 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 da. But we shouldn't allow prejudice like that to gain a footing. And I think it's significant in San Francisco, which is rather not just hedonistic, but in many ways, because of that hedonism, opposed to religion. It doesn't like moral constraints that they sort of lash out. Yeah. So that's what I read into that law there.
Well, very quickly, we have just a minute and a half or so left here. Official Sunday day of rest. Would this...
Well, this is a big and developing story.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Just give us a little foundation in which we can be thinking until we talk about it next time.
Well, when the Seventh-day Adventist Church began, even in the United States, there were severe or very serious efforts made to bring in legislation to call Sunday a formal day of rest for religious worship. Those were defeated. And probably could not get through now. But what we're seeing is a resurgence on efforts to set aside Sunday by people of faith. But this time around, they're using the argument that it should be a day of family rest and regeneration from the work cycle, in the wake of the economic collapse. We shouldn't be just money-oriented. We should look to larger social values, and it's certainly good to bring a family together. There's nothing wrong with that part of the argument, but it clearly is being used as a subterfuge to advance legal sacredness or legal enforcement of a day that is held sacred by most Protestants, not Seventh-day Adventists, certainly not Jews who are not Protestants, but Protestants and Catholics. So we object to this because this is legislating religious morality undercover.
Okay. Well, Lincoln Steed, we have had a good discussion today about some of the topics.
Plenty to talk about, always. And please go to the website.
Yep, that's www.libertymagazine.org. Check it out. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.